All right, ladies and gentlemen, today I've got Sara Tarpa here. She's a lawyer. She's the managing director of the Migration Agency, which is a visa and immigration consultancy supporting growing businesses and individuals with high quality personalized immigration solutions. She's also the co-founder and investor in FONA, F-O-N-A, a non-profit organization dedicated to establishing new models for quality education and infrastructure in developing communities. She's also been a speaker at various different live events, including the Vivid Festival of Ideas. And she's passionate about many things, including immigration, of course, and entrepreneurship, diversity and innovation, probably a whole bunch of other cool things. So in this pod, we'll talk about the Migration Agency. We'll talk a bit about FONA, some of these speaking events. And we're also going to give you some advice about how to start a law firm. And I know that there's the Great Resignation is approaching and that some of you might be considering starting your own law firm. So it might be useful to get a bit of a roadmap from someone out there who's already done it and done it well. So before we dive in, just letting you know, in the episode notes for this podcast, you should see a link for a free law firm marketing plan PDF. And if you want to apply for a coaching call, you can have one-on-one assistance with me. And there's also a link to a page at my website for legalsites.com.au. It's filled with great products and services that I use and I recommend. So also, please consider leaving a 5-star review and subscribing if you enjoyed the content today, and let some people know about the podcast if you think they would enjoy it. And finally, I'll just introduce myself. I'm your host, Brennan Kelso, law grad turned law firm marketing specialist, founder of legalsites.com.au, and you're listening to the Better Law Firm Marketing Podcast. And in this podcast, you'll learn how to leverage the most time-efficient law firm marketing strategies to get more leads, more clients, and more profit. That's enough of that. Sara, thank you for waiting patiently.
Thanks, Brendan, for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm glad you're here too, just to fill in the listeners out there. Sara had no idea that she was doing a pod today. She thought we were just having a chat and I probably didn't fill her in enough. So I've ambushed you, Sara. So are you ready for the quick fire questions?
I am 100% ready. Let's do it.
Well, that's good because I'm not going to do any quick fire questions. It's not that sort of, it's not like an interrogation. So I think you're going to, I think it's going to be good. This is going to be as real as it gets. You haven't prepared. I generally don't prepare intensely for my podcast either. I've got a few notes. I'm interested in learning more about you. So yeah, I think we'll get into it.
Sounds fantastic. Yeah, let's do it.
So I guess the way I want to start is, like, tell me about the Migration Agency.
So the Migration Agency is a law practice. We're headquartered in Sydney, Australia, but we have operations in various parts of the world, including New Zealand, Philippines, India, and South Africa currently. So I founded the company in 2015. I'm a corporate escapee. I worked as an in-house counsel and also in private practice during my law career in Australia and overseas. During my law career, I developed a really keen interest in international business. And I myself moved from country to country during my career. So I was always really interested in, you know, opportunities to learn and gain new experience abroad. So setting up an immigration firm was a really nice fit with my area of interest, and also, you know, I'm very passionate about practicing in an area of law that makes a difference in people's lives and in people's businesses. So I established the firm out of a vision to provide more personalised, strategic immigration solutions into the market. In the times that I was starting the Migration Agency, there was a real push towards Australia becoming an innovation nation. And it occurred to me that, you know, if we were going to be an innovative nation, we needed to look at ways that we could really boost diversity and attract top talent to Australia. And so immigration law was a really cool way for me to be able to make a difference in that area. So over the years, we've sort of grown the firm to focus on providing commercial immigration solutions to businesses that are growing or looking to go international, and also working with top individual clients who are looking to bring their skills or investments or, you know, reunite with family in Australia.
Okay, so what does that look like? You're talking about commercial clients and then some high-end individuals. So, like, what would be some examples of, you know, like, you know, matters that you deal with?
So in terms of the commercial or corporate immigration side of our business, so we work with businesses of all shapes and sizes. So from, you know, small, savvy startups, maybe they're just getting their big idea off the ground, and they need a key person in their business who requires a visa to be able to work with them. And then we might grow with them. So they might grow into becoming a medium-sized business and they might have, you know, quite a diverse workforce. We might help them develop a talent mobility and immigration program so that they can hire people from wherever they find them in the world to work in their business and help secure, you know, work-related visas for them or facilitate travel for their staff. And then the sort of bigger corporate client might be a large Australian company or a multinational company that has a lot of staff movement. And so we handle their immigration program. So dealing with all aspects relating to immigration law for them. So, you know, company sponsorships, work permits, residence applications, citizenship applications, immigration compliance, all of those sorts of things. So that was a very natural fit for me because I did have a corporate commercial background. So I sort of understood where the immigration commercial aspects overlapped.
Yeah.
And it's quite unique in our market to deliver immigration solutions that are, you know, have a real commercial understanding associated with them. So the solutions that we come up with are very tailored to business objectives and, you know, the business's context. For individuals, we would be dealing with, you know, highly skilled individuals that are coming to Australia on skilled visas or global talent visas. We work with high net worth clients who are maybe investing in Australia and we help them with their investor visas. And we also help reunite families. So we do partner parent visas for individuals as well. We're a full service firm, so we cover all areas, but those are some of the areas that we mostly focus on.
Okay. So if one of your commercial clients is hiring you, are you assisting them in finding the talent, or have they already have their own channels for finding the talent? They just need you to do all the legal stuff?
So our law practice doesn't actually source talent, but we do have partners that help facilitate, you know, the talent sourcing. So international recruitment is a big topic. And we actually have business partners and also a sister company that can facilitate, you know, the actual sourcing of talent. And that came about due to the realization that when we were talking to customers and they'd say, well, that's great, you can do the visa, but that's really only the mechanism to bring them to Australia. But what we actually need is to find the talent themselves. And so it was a logical progression for us to look at, you know, building out the business in that way. So as a result, we set up a company last year that also works in the international recruitment space because that the market told us that that's what they needed. And so we responded to that and set that up.
It's interesting. So, like, how do you get clients? Forgive me for not knowing a lot about your space. So, like, how does this work? Like, yeah, how do people come in to the firm? How do they find out about you?
Yeah, look, marketing is a really interesting area for an immigration business because there's no shortage of people that want to come to Australia. So if we advertise ourselves as a, you know, Australian immigration firm or whatever, we get inundated with every man and his dog wants to enjoy the life of Australia. So, you know, that's obviously never worked for us. We mostly find clients through a referral partnership network. So we've invested a lot over the years in, you know, building up partnerships with other firms that might refer their clients to us. that's great because it's already a trusted relationship that the client already has with the referring partner. So when they're introduced to us, there's an immediate sense of trust, credibility and so on that gets attached to that. So that's been super powerful for us. In the business space as well, referral partners are extremely important. Also through my network. So I'm very active on maintaining great relationships with people who are in my network. And as they move organizations, sometimes that's an opportunity to be introduced to a new potential client. So, we've grown our business through relationships, I would say. That's been quite fundamental to us. And it's only just now that we're becoming a little bit more sophisticated with digital marketing. In the early days, apart from having a website and a really good pitch document, it was mostly just digging into my network and seeking introductions, looking at opportunities to put the brand out there with educational content, speaking opportunities and things like that, and aligning with other organizations with a similar customer base so that we could be that, referral partner to them.
Mm. Okay. Do you have any advice to law firms who want to expand their referral network? It seems to be a topic that comes up a bit on this podcast, so everyone seems to have their own opinion. What's worked well for you?
I think in the early days it was really about identifying who are really ideal partners. So there has to be a win-win, I think, in any partnership. So we look at ways that we can help our partners. Maybe it's through helping feed the need for content in their business. They want to provide valuable insights and content to their clients or to their members, and we can help by providing that. For some of our referral partners, their relationship with their customer and just being able to have a little black book of great contacts that they can refer to, and they know if they refer someone to Sarah at the migration agency, their customer is going to be delighted, will receive great, customer service, very aligned with the way that, they deliver their services. So having an alignment around the service model is really important. I think just nurturing the relationships is also important. So with our referral partners, we also try and find ways that we can help them grow their business. So, for example, we just formed a partnership with an employment-related global firm. And because we've now got this great partnership in place and they refer customers to us that need immigration services, I'm always thinking, okay, well, where could I find an opportunity to introduce them in a conversation that I'm having? So it creates a really nice give and take in the relationship, and they also feel like they're getting some value. I might not always have clients to recommend to them, but I might be able to put them in front of an audience that they wouldn't otherwise, or make an introduction. So really nurturing those relationships, I think, is a really important way to grow a partnership network.
Yeah, easy, simple way to nurture a referral relationship is to thank people for referrals. And I found 100%. I really like the people who thank me when I give them a referral. And the ones who don't... I don't know what's going on there, but yeah, just definitely, yes. It's nice to be thanked, isn't it?
100%. I think it's very humbling when you move out of the corporate world and start your own business. And there's a bit of boot dust that you eat in the early days, and there's a lot of letting go of your ego, and you start to really value and appreciate the things that people do to help you in business. And so I'd say, over the years, my gratitude has really become, at a much higher level, where if someone goes out of their way to put my business in front of their customer, there is always a follow-up email to say thank you very much and let them know where that's landed. Now we've become a bit more sophisticated in terms of, really thanking people that have referred business to us with a thoughtful gift or, something that shows that it's really highly valued. Because the effort and the expense that we'd have to go to acquire a customer from scratch is much higher than a referral. A referral, you've already got your foot in the door. If there's a need, you've got a very high chance that you're going to actually win that business. So they've really taken away a lot of barriers and costs and other things to, you know, potentially acquiring that customer. And so I think I agree with you. I think it's super important to be thankful for that and show people it's appreciated. Otherwise, why would they put the time and effort into it?
Yeah, exactly. You said a few things that I've put in the brain. So you said some people rely on you for content. What did you mean by that?
So look, being a lawyer, I always say I'm not very good at sales. I hate being salesy. There's nothing worse to me than cold calling or saying, hi, you know, do you need my service? But I've always found that educational content is a helpful way to put your name out there. So, and over time, I've started to realize how valuable that is as we are seeing a greater emphasis placed on content marketing now in the marketplace. We consume so much content. How do you keep up with that? So, you know, as an immigration firm, we're very niche, but we also have a lot of insights that we can share about what's happening. You know, with the borders reopening, when the borders were shut, there was a lot that people didn't know about that we could, you know, give insights on. So we are always thinking, okay, what insights do we have and how could we maybe write a blog article or, you know, a white paper or something and or do a joint webinar with another partner where we can share our insights and expertise and that's of value to their customers. So it also it ticks the box of the partner because they feel like their customers are getting that additional insight or information that they wouldn't be able to come up with themselves. Mm. So it's a really valuable, I suppose, tool to give to partners.
Mm. Yeah. You also touched on like your partnership arrangements, like your referral partnership arrangements. Are you like, are you happy to talk a bit more about how that works, or is that kind of like a closely guarded secret?
Oh, it's not a closely guarded secret. I'm happy to share. Yeah. We used to do referral partnerships informally. And to be honest, that is the most straightforward way to get started is, you know, find like-minded people, similar approach to business, similar values, overlapping customer base, and just build great relationships. So we've never monetized referral partnerships. And that comes back to the value I was mentioning before. So a lot of times if it's a new partner, they don't know us very well, they'll say, okay, well, can I get a cut if I refer a customer to you? And so we always have a conversation about how we don't monetize referrals, but there's a whole bunch of value that we can provide them or their members. Maybe we offer competitive pricing to their customer or member, or maybe we provide a little something for free that we would otherwise charge for. But it's a little gift or a little taster of our service, which actually is in our interest because that's also a way of demonstrating what we're capable of to their customer. So that's, you know, priming their customer to buy from us anyway. So we structure our partnerships in that way. So it's all about where's the cut-through value that we could offer them, but without actually putting any sort of fee around it. I personally, and I know I don't have the same opinion as everybody, but I personally feel like if you're paying someone to send you a customer, it starts to create a bit of a, well, is it a conflict of interest sometimes? Or is that incentivizing them to refer a customer when it might not necessarily be the best service or solution for them? Maybe there's a perception issue about that too that we need to bear in mind. So customers knowing that there's no interest in them being referred other than the fact that we're a great provider, I think keeps it nice and clean.
Yeah, there's a exactly. So if the client was to find out that this was a financial arrangement, that might not be in the best interest of the client. And it's also right. Like if law firms are paying for referrals, maybe, you know, they might, it only takes some other law firm to go, all right, well, we'll just pay more. And then they're not, you know, it could become like a bidding game. It depends. Like, how you look at it, but it just seems like a slippery slope.
100%. Yeah. And I think, you know, the migration agency has always positioned itself as being a sort of a premium provider in the sense that we deliver second to none service. You know, we are very customer centered. We like to delight our customers. One of our values is we want to be wow. So customers walk away going, wow, that was a really incredible experience. So it's all about, you know, creating an incredible experience. We don't want to be sitting and having a price war or haggling over costs. In fact, rarely do we ever have to worry about that. So I think it's problematic if you start to put those sort of financial terms in place, because then you may be viewed more as a commodity rather than as a really sort of, you know, outstanding service or solutions provider. So it's helped us, I think, to keep it quite clean so we don't end up in those conversations. And I think that could potentially devalue our service and our brand.
So do you have, like, sorry if I'm being like, I sometimes I pry a bit, but is there,
no,
like,
by all means,
is there some sort of like contract that you have with these referral partnerships, or is this more of like a verbal kind of agreement?
Yeah, we used to have just an understanding, really. I would put together, so in the early days, you know, if I wanted to, I'd maybe meet a HR firm or an employment law firm or a recruitment firm. These were the typical, you know, business feeders for us. And I'd go and have a meeting with them and have a nice little presentation about our company, and I'd maybe have some preferential pricing for their customers so they can say to their customer, look, we've negotiated great rates. And then that would be it. You know, they'd just have our proposal there and they would probably just refer us business. We have in the last sort of 12 months started to formalize our partnership network a little bit more. And we've actually got a role now that we're recruiting for, which is a head of partnerships. And so this person is, their job is going to be to nurture and build our partnership network. And that's going to be, a bit more formalized. So we will have some terms in place. But this is also to create a bit of structure around what we want to do together. What would they like to offer our customers? What could we offer their customers? You know, how do we talk about each other? You know, lawyers love T's and C's. There's always stuff that you can stick in there to, you know, create some structure around the partnership. So we do have that, but I don't know that that's going to materially change much, because people will only refer business to you as long as they think that you're amazing and their customers are being really well looked after and they like dealing with you. You know, you're a pleasure to deal with, you're responsive and commercial and you get it, what they're trying to achieve as well, keep them in the loop. So as long as we're doing all of those things, I think, you know, it's not a big deal if it's not formalized. Obviously, if there were commission payments and things, you'd need to have contracts in place. But for what we do, we, you know, even we've got some very big partnerships now where, you know, we are exclusively referred business from certain, but we still don't necessarily have contracts in place. They just like what we do and they like us as people. And yeah, we just get really embedded in their business and off we go.
All right. Cool. You mentioned digital marketing. So what are you guys doing now?
So we have dabbled in a few different things. I've got a few war stories about what's not worked.
Please tell.
So, in the early days when you're a business owner, you're a jack of all trades and master of none. You know, you're trying to deliver the service, you're trying to do sales and marketing and accounting and, you know, all those other things. And then we moved into sort of having external agencies do bits of things for us. So, you know, we had a content writing agency and we had a social media agency, and we burned a lot of cash and didn't see a lot of results. And in some instances saw zero results. And that's a bit disappointing because, you know, when you put money into your marketing, you want to see some return on investment. We dabbled in working with different firms. I think the lesson out of that, though, was we're a services business. We're not a product business. So we can't just walk up to any old agency and say, hey, help us market our product. It needs to be someone who actually understands the industry and can, you know, and knows how to qualify leads. So you're not paying for, you know, leads that aren't worth anything to you, you know, all that sort of stuff is really important. But I don't think we really understood that to be making wise decisions about that. So we until recently, we had an agency managing our digital marketing, so doing some lead magnets and landing pages and ads and things like that. We've always found it hard to, even in that case, we're not working with the agency anymore because they weren't able to deliver on the key deliverables that, were outlined. So, again, I think it was an issue with understanding our business and also just being able to pull all the pieces together and execute on it correctly. So we've now taken a decision to bring it in-house. So we've just hired a group marketing manager and we're building out a marketing team so that we've got someone who's really responsible for the brand, upholds the, you know, the vision and what we're trying to achieve with the business, is giving us advice as we're growing, and we're growing new businesses all the time. We've actually got like multiple new businesses on the bubble at the moment now. So that creates that layer of, you know, responsibility and accountability for marketing. And then we'll use agencies for the things that we require. But we've gotten to a point now where with our size, it made sense to have a dedicated resource to be able to manage that for us. So it's not all sitting with me or anyone else in the business. It's not a marketeer.
Yeah. So what are you doing, like SEO, Google Ads, Facebook?
Yeah, we do ads on social. And the immigration firm, our main focus is B2B. 80% of our business is working with businesses. So we do ads on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And some on Facebook. So we haven't been delving too much yet into Google Ads. We've done that in the past, but as I said, it was a bit tricky to sort of get to the right type of customer if someone was searching on Google. So I think we probably just needed a better strategy around Google Ads. We're looking to make more investment in that now. So we do have a more well-rounded marketing ecosystem that's like bubbling away and generating leads that we can then, you know, develop and convert more easily. But until now, marketing has mostly been about brand awareness and, you know, having some posts on social and things like that. We haven't been that great at some of the more sophisticated things we should be doing.
There's always more stuff that you could be doing. Believe me, I know how that feels.
Tell me about it.
So yeah. LinkedIn, you're doing LinkedIn ads. So are those going? I've seen them. I haven't seen your ads. I've seen some LinkedIn ads before and I've not been too interested in them. So how are you going with, like, are they working well for the firm?
It's early days. I don't have some good results yet on them to be able to confirm either way. I mean, I'm satisfied that that's the market that that's where our target market is. So our target market is like a HR manager or a recruitment manager or a business leader, and they do tend to hang out on LinkedIn. We've got some really good content now, like, you know, some great downloadable things that are of value where we've put a lot of our IP into them to really offer something that's useful. So we've had a little bit of a attraction with it, but, you know, we've got to ramp that up, I think, to be able to have some really concrete, you know, feedback to share with you and your listeners about whether that's a success or not. Yeah, it's too early to say probably.
I think there's this real focus on data-driven marketing, which is great, and there needs to be data driven marketing. But like this is my opinion, is that you can't measure everything. You can try, but marketing can be measured to an extent. Sometimes you've just got to look at the bigger picture. Is the firm doing better than they were before they were investing in marketing? And that's kind of like going to answer your question. That's how I see it anyway, because like I can do all the conversion tracking possible on a Google Ads campaign, but at the end of the day, someone can click on an ad and get distracted by the dog and then think about, like, in a week's time, they'll be like, oh, what was that law firm I was going to call? And then they go and call them, and, well, that might not be counted And then someone might call, you know, a law firm from clicking on an ad, and that gets counted as a conversion, but then they don't become a client. So 100%.
I completely agree with you. Something I've learned too, not through advertising on LinkedIn, but just through the organic, you know, posting that we've been doing, is that there's a few interesting insights that have come out. People are watching even if they're not engaging. And if we just look at the metrics around likes and comments, you know, that's not going to tell us very much. But what I've noticed is that people are following what we're doing, even if they're not really engaging with us. And then at some point they'll say, oh, I've seen what you're doing on LinkedIn. That's really cool. We've partnered with a very big, well-known HR and employment firm. I got an email out of the blue from their general counsel who says, oh, I've been following you on LinkedIn for a while. We now want to wind up our migration law practice. Was wondering if you would be interested in taking over all of our immigration law clients. And by the way, we could partner and do a lot of cross promotion and do, you know, joint products and things like that. What do you think? It's like, yes, that'd be amazing. I had no idea. It wasn't even on my radar that was being observed. But it was just consistency in being online, having some interesting things to say, being a bit insights driven with our marketing. So not just posting whatever, all pretty pictures and like stuff that's just going to clutter people's news feeds, but, you know, really good content that people might think, oh, I wonder if I should actually be paying for this because it's good. And then it's memorable. And if someone then does have a need, then they come. And that's definitely the thing about immigration is you don't always need it, but when you do, you want to be top of mind to that, you know, when the customer does, you want to be top of mind to them. So, so that's been an interesting insight. That's our social media activity has definitely generated partnerships we didn't even anticipate. I've gotten calls out of the blue from partners who have said, oh, I saw you were speaking at that event. How's business? That's such a cool opportunity. And then you start to reactivate the partnership a bit again. But we've also been doing, we've got a very strong social responsibility angle, a community impact angle to our business through FONA and, you know, other initiatives. And whenever we post anything about how our business is helping others, our metrics just go through the roof. People are so engaged about that. Mm-hmm. We get lots of comments. And so people also like to see information about what you're doing that actually matters, not just talking about yourself. So that's been another big takeaway from our social media activity, especially on LinkedIn.
Yeah, so tell me about FONA.
So FONA is a bit of a passion project. So it's a not-for-profit organisation that my husband and I created in 2015, actually at around the same time I created the business. But there was some significant earthquakes in Nepal, and it caused widespread devastation. My husband is from Nepal, and so the village where he is from, east of Kathmandu, was virtually wiped out. There were many communities that were, you know, completely destroyed. So we recognised that we were in a pretty privileged position. You know, we had contacts, we had access to funding, and we thought surely there's something that we can do here. We're not, you know, people from the charity sector. We're private sector people. We think like business people. So we were interested in, you know, finding ways to help, but we also saw what was happening on the ground with lots of people rushing in, very well intentioned to try and help. And Nepal was getting rebuilt like a shanty town. It was quite sad, actually. I don't know if you saw any of the images in the news, but, you know, houses being built back with, you know, corrugated iron sheets, and the beauty, the architecture, the culture, the richness of the country could potentially be lost if someone didn't go in and say, hang on a minute, there's a better way of doing this. You know, we don't need to treat this like some, you know, third world shantytown solution. So we created FONA. We raised over $500,000 dollars just as a Facebook page for existing charities, and we funneled the work there. So we just drummed up, you know, support from our network, got into corporates and said, is there something that you can do to help run a fundraiser or something? So, yeah, we raised $500,000. That was pretty good. And we thought, hang on a minute, this is now all going to the UN and the Red Cross and all these organizations that are valuable, highly funded by governments. We thought, well, what's going to happen at a grassroots level? How are we going to make sure that money really gets distributed to where it needs to go? So we created the not-for-profit. I actually wrote the constitution and did the charity registration and all that sort of stuff. And it was designed to focus initially on Nepal, but now we've kind of, you know, started to work on projects that have international benefit. The main area of focus is around building infrastructure for education in remote communities. So we have a project that we've just completed in the village where my husband comes from. It's called Pereno Jungajoli Village in Sindhali. And we've just built an education centre of excellence. So this is a modern, you know, leapfrog, you know, school building that's going to be able to deliver incredible education to kids with an agricultural technology focus because it's quite a remote community. So that's been a long time coming. We collaborated with some incredible organisations to master plan the school. So Melbourne Uni, Thrive Research Hub, Include Design, Biurban, some really wonderful stakeholders got involved to just vision what could a real sort of community hub school look like for the future. And then even during COVID, we managed to fumble our way through to keep the construction happening, and we literally just handed over the key about a month ago to the school principal. And so now the students are all in there and studying, and that's phase one. We're going to be building some more infrastructure in the school, but it's quickly become a real hub. People love spending time there. With everyone in the village was consulted during the design process, so we flew out some architects to go and have a look and meet everybody. So everyone from kindergarten kids all the way through to the year 12 students, parents and teachers were consulted in the design phase. So they were effectively co-designing the school for themselves, which is a very powerful notion. There's actually PhD research that's been happening around this project to make this a model for other schools to implement. So I could talk about Fauna all day, but does that answer a little bit about what Fauna is about and what we do? Yeah.
That's great. So if someone wants to help out, like how can they get started?
So there's a few different ways. So Fauna is about connecting the best and brightest from around the world to, you know, make a difference in the communities that we work in. So again, back to the power of partnerships. It's all about partnerships. So if someone is interested in being involved in some way, you know, we'd love to look at, you know, how we could partner together and make that happen in a win-win scenario. So, you know, whether it's through being a sponsor of the school, being a sponsor of teachers or students to be able to complete their education through the school, donating other, you know, skills or money to the project would be amazing. The website, if I can mention it, is fona.org.au. So that's where you can go and have a look more about the project. And there's also a place there to make donations if you're interested. But I'd very much welcome the contact of anyone who's interested in getting involved in a more sort of long-term way, and we can find ways to make that mutually beneficial.
I love it. Well, I know that you have to get going soon, and I apologise to the listeners out there. I think we've run out of time. I would have loved to have asked you about your speaking events and talked a bit more about a roadmap of starting a law firm, but I think we've run out of time, and we could probably make this podcast go for 2 hours if we wanted to. So we might have to cut it off. But if someone's you know, looking for some advice, you know, if they slide into your DMs on LinkedIn and ask you a few questions, is that okay, or is that
would be most welcome? Yeah, that's great. Absolutely.
You're not going to tell them to piss off.
No, I'm not like that at all.
That's great. Yeah. Okay. All right, Sarah. Well, I'm going to wrap up the podcast. I'll turn off the recording soon. We'll have a quick little chat. But just to all the listeners out there, thanks for your time today. And look in the episode notes to learn more about Sara and Fona and the migration agency. There'll be some links in there. If you want to get that law firm marketing plan and the other things at legalsites.com.au, there'll be links for that as well. If you enjoyed what you heard, please consider leaving a review, subscribe, and tell everyone you know about the podcast. That's it. So until next time, I'm Brennan Kelso, and you've been listening to the Better Law Firm Marketing Podcast. All right. Bye for now.